abandon free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
There will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It is Friday, February 7th, 2014. I'm headed to Washington College in Maryland as we speak, but I'm sharing with you today my recent conversation with Mike Church of Sirius XM Satellite Radio. The Mike Church Show airs Monday through Friday, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern Time, while you're on your commute on the Sirius Patriot Channel. Just a quick reminder, tomorrow night I'm going to be at Grove City College in Grove City, Pennsylvania. Then March 1st at the College of Southern Idaho, March 5th at Washburn University in Topeka, Kansas, and March 15th at the University of Central Arkansas, with a couple more dates in the works, one for South Carolina and one for Florida. I'll keep you updated on those. All right, enough of that. Let's turn to Mike Church, host of the Mike Church Show. You can find Mike at MikeChurch.com. I can't say there are a whole lot of radio hosts I'm aware of who find old, significant, out-of-print books from American history and bring them back into print with scholarly forewords, but Mike Church does that. I don't know a lot of radio hosts who have the brain power to be able to read one of these books, much less recognize its significance and then go to the trouble of bringing it back into print for the benefit of everyone, but that's Mike Church. You can find that kind of thing at MikeChurch.com, in addition to his daily commentary, excerpts from interviews, and more. Mike is just a fantastic guy. Before I bring him on, I want you guys to know, in case you don't know, Mike changed his mind on some issues because of the Ron Paul revolution, because of Ron Paul's presidential campaign starting in 2007. And he stood to gain nothing from this, other than a lot of grief and a lot of lost listeners. But he did it because it was the right thing to do. So for that and many other reasons, it is my great pleasure to welcome to my program, after having been a guest on his program many times, the great Mike Church. Mike, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Tom. Good to be with you.
All right, Mike, you know that I'm pretty much your number one fan, you know, in the non-misery Stephen King sense of that term. And I want to have you talk about a couple of columns you've written recently because they're so... Well, frankly, the exact opposite of what I would expect to read half the time on the Daily Caller. Now, it seems like the Daily Caller will allow some people of our persuasion to say their piece, which is nice to see, and you are one of those people. Now, you had a column. I don't want to go to your most recent column just yet. I want to start in the more distant past. About a week ago, you had a column in anticipation of the State of the Union, or maybe it was after the State of the Union, but and it was called "There Is No Union to Give a State of." And I thought, oh, why did I not think of that? And now the church has used it; it's gone forever. So, what's the premise of that piece? I love that title. What's the premise?
Well, the premise of the of "There Is No Union to Give a State of" is that in the 1787 and then 1827 and 1897 and probably all the way up until about the time the progressives latched their teeth into the 16th Amendment, 17th Amendment, all the stuff that happened after that. There was a sense of, and at least a respect towards the states, as Kevin Gutzman likes to call them, insular political entities, and meaning that they're sovereign. They exist. They are. And they without their permission, there is no union. Well, last I checked, in the last, especially in the last 50 years, the union seems inescapable. And to me, under the original terms of a compact, that's not a union at all. That's more like a jail sentence or a prison term. So, a voluntary group of entities that decide that, you know what? It really stinks to have to make war against Japanese people if you're just all by yourself and you're the size of New Hampshire. maybe we ought to get Texas and Wyoming and Florida involved in this, too. So there are very specific, I'm not telling you anything you don't know, but maybe the audience doesn't know, there's very few specific things that we kind of appointed our agent, the federal monstrosity, to do on our behalf. Well, that's not how it works anymore. We don't appoint or assign anything to them. They tell us what they have confiscated or what powers that they have assumed, and that is just not in keeping with the concept of union, the idea, and the legal framework of a compact. I mean, that sounds more like something that you would expect to read coming out of the 1950s, 60s, and 70s Soviet Union, where you are with us, comrade. You will not escape this. There is no union. There's only what we tell you. There's only what we say is union, and we say that you are in it. And so my thought was somebody needs to actually try and make the point, and Daily Caller has an audience that is not always at TomWoods.com or MikeChurch.com or LibertyClassroom.com. They're probably hanging out in other places, and they don't get this point of view. And if they do, it's so watered down as to be inert or impotent. And so I just wanted to actually bring to their audience and to their readers stuff that I've been talking about on the radio for years, and you've been giving speeches about it, and I've been giving speeches about it, and it went over surprisingly well. I didn't receive any death threats or hate mail or anyone wanting to know where I hung my rebel flag and my Stonewall Jackson fathead on the wall. So I thought it was pretty well received, actually.
Yeah, that's nice. Now, it's interesting that you make a point like that, that the union was supposed to have a certain structure, is supposed to work a certain way, the principals are supposed to be the states, the agent is supposed to be the government in D.C., and you would think this would be something we would be having a national conversation about, and some people would be on our side, and other people would be on the nationalist side, and we would duke it out. But instead, everybody's on the nationalist side, and if you make our point, which doesn't seem on the face of it to be a preposterous position, you're just dismissed from society. It's like there is no the conversation takes place between the two nationalist sides, and those of us who take our side are accused of all kinds of sinister motives. Why do you think they do that?
Well, I think they do that. Number one, one part about my setup I forgot is, and I don't know if you saw this, but I did quote you in that, and I've been using your Blob of America line.
Appreciate that.
I've been using and abusing the Blob of America, and ladies and gentlemen, that comes from Tom Woods. I cannot take credit from it. TomWoods.com.
Well, by the way, hang on one second. The audience might not know what that means, so why don't you show that you have integrated it successfully by explaining it to them?
Well, I will say that the original union was brought about, as I said, so that the general government, which was based in New York, then Philadelphia, then Washington, would execute on behalf of the states a few select powers. There never was intended to be this one gigantic, as you say, blob of America, which is, okay, there's this giant landmass that is America, and everything that happens in it has to be controlled by one entity. And as a previous conversation, there is no escape from it. So I use the term blob, and for younger members of the audience, this refers back to a 1950s or 60s era horror movie starring Steve McQueen. But it really has become it consumes everything in its wake, and once you get consumed by it, you're never heard from again.
Now, see, Mike, if I had what you have, like you have access to your band and all these talented audio people, I would get somebody in one of those sort of audio echo chambers to talk about the blob. You know, so every time the issue comes up, you know, where the states are all forced to do the same damn thing, I would just press that button and have it, because I want to force this into the conversation. I want to force these people to admit, yes, I believe that the way we're supposed to live is as a giant blob. I think that's the most humane way for people to live, for 300 million people to be part of a big blob with no differentiating characteristics anywhere, or otherwise we're going to send in the tanks and crush you. I want them to acknowledge that, so I want to laugh at them. I mean, as you've noticed on your show, laughter is the best weapon we have against these people. Ridicule is the best way to go after them.
Yeah, and I think I'm going to take you up on that. While you were talking, I was actually making a note. Make blob sound effect and intro bit.
That's right.
But I want to answer the previous question as to why I think that that they do this. And I think that what has happened is, and this is another thing that would take us to another Daily Caller column, that you have to just stick a red-hot poker in people's eyes to get them to maybe even acknowledge that they have acquiesced to this. But I believe what animates and what drives and what gives the blobists, can we use that term, the blobists?
Please, I like that term.
Blobists, what gives the blobists their power is this paternalism, this fake patriotism, which holds that everything that is, that happens in the blob is it is holy, it is sacred, it is to be defended, it is to be protected, and best of all, it should be, it can be and should be and must be exported so that all of humanity can partake of our greatness. And I think that that's really what the glue that holds it together. And whether you are a progressive internationalist and you think that you can save the rest of the world by freeing women in countries that aren't allowed to vote and abort their babies and what have you, or whether you're John McCain and Lindsey Graham and you think you can save the rest of the world by killing anyone who stands in opposition to what I just said, and then some, there is this, as I said, fake patriotism, or I think more accurately described in historical terms, this Jacobinism of, hey, we're Americans. You know, we invented this way of life, and we think it's so good that we're going to let the rest of you have it. And even if you don't want it, we're going to make you take it. And I think that is what has, that's what draws all this thing together. Because few people think, and Texas may be one of the examples, and you and I have both spoken and been to Texas, few people actually believe any longer that the state that they live in, maybe they were even born in and are raising their children in, is somewhat of an example of what I just talked about. But you would be hard-pressed to try and convince the people of Texas that they should go and invade Yemen or fly drones over Yemen. You'd have a very difficult time explaining to the people of Lubbock, Texas, why they were defending the Suez Canal. Or why they had Texans that were still manning the ramparts at the 51st parallel in South Korea, between South Korea and North Korea. So I think that is how they get away with it. I don't know if that's the why, but I think that's how they have gotten away with it.
Well, it seems that, of course, the reason they want to marginalize the rest of us is to limit the number of choices people have. So you're right that somebody in Lubbock may find it unpersuasive when they say we've got to be involved in Yemen or this or that other place. So what they do is they say that all responsible opinion can be found within this range. You're either Woodrow Wilson, you want to go fight for human rights, or you're Teddy Roosevelt and you want to go fight on behalf of American nationalism. You know, tomato, tomato, the regime doesn't care on what grounds you fight as long as the favored constituents in the military-industrial complex get their dough, and as long as the regime gets more powerful, what do they care if you want to fight for feminism or you want to fight for the American flag? It makes no difference to them. And now this actually leads us into your next column, your most recent column from just the other day, and it's very provocatively titled, Taboo, Another Casualty of Our Never-Ending Wars. It is warming my heart even as I look at it to see that this is up at the Daily Caller. We'll link to it in the show notes, this and the other piece. But what kind of taboo are you talking about here?
Okay, well, the taboo that I speak of, and it's in quotation marks in the piece, is death by conquest. And that is that our American ancestors, going way back, even before we were we, meaning there actually was almost 170 years of history in North America before there was a Declaration of Independence. I think 169 years to be exact. So, and then we happened, but even after we happened, our ancestors who were founders and then their sons and great-grandsons and granddaughters had an aversion to conquest. Now, certainly not all of them, but as a whole, in the way we conducted our affairs internationally, we had an aversion to conquesting other peoples because we had kind of, someone had tried to conquest us or to subjugate us. And the method that was used was, of course, bringing the Hessians over here with the British regulars and by point of the end of a gun. So we didn't like that. As a matter of fact, it's in the Declaration of Independence that we rejected that, that was not a legitimate way to form a country and then to govern it. But that all changed after Teddy Roosevelt and his buddies. And the key turning point, number one, was Lincoln and the Civil War. That was the first thing that had to happen to make it so that total war theory was palatable. And then we compounded that about 40 years later with this horrific idea that somehow the Philippine Islands, were in need of the same treatment that the South had applied to it. I mean, most Americans don't even know today that there were concentration camps, American-run concentration camps, in the Philippine Islands. Of course, we were convinced they wanted our Constitution and our form of government, but they were not. And there was only one radical Republican senator left over in the United States Senate that opposed this, and this was the great-grandson of Roger Sherman. And, Tom, you know Roger Sherman, one of the greatest members of the founding generation, certainly the most untalked about or not so popular today. Well, Sherman's grandson, George Frisbee Hoar, was the sole member of the radical Republicans in the Senate that said, you guys can't do this. In order to do this, you have to repeal the Declaration of Independence. And although he didn't say death by conquest, that's, if you read between the lines, that's what he meant. And what he meant to say was that if you're willing by brute force to force feed American nationalism to someone, well, then some American generation, maybe 10 years, 20 years, 100 years into the future, is going to have to answer for that. Now, I don't think we've quite answered for it completely yet, or that we've begun the process, but certainly we have foregone now, as Frisbee Horsett, what you give up to do that is you are no longer that shining beacon that you think you are. You are, no longer the friend to all who seek liberty and who are oppressed. And that's what we have surrendered. And we have certainly surrendered it in spades since 9/11. Shows a little bit of sign, I don't know, maybe of slowing down. I don't think it's abating, but slowing down. So I just wanted to make the point again to that audience, which I don't see that point has been made or is made, that these wars and the culture that you're raising in order to fight these wars for this fake patriotism that you have convinced them that it is that their lives are worthy of being expended for, this is the problem. And I think it's the principle. I think it's the principal problem. I think it's the main problem. I think when that one starts to change, I think that an awful lot of the rest of it follows suit.
Mike, I think the fact that you connect this to the war of 1861 to 1865 is very helpful because Robert E. Lee, I'm going to quote Robert E. Lee, so that, of course, means I support slavery, even though Lee didn't. But obviously I support slavery. That's what other explanation could there be? But Robert E. Lee said, in reflecting on America post-bellum, he said that what you're going to have now is a regime that will be aggressive abroad and despotic at home. And then more recently, you had Richard Weaver, the great conservative thinker of the 20th century, who expressly made the connection between the consolidation of the Union and then a generation later strutting about the world, throwing our weight around against other people. Now, I use the word our there, and shame on me for that. So the one area that I would have a slight cosmetic, but maybe not just cosmetic disagreement here, is the use of the word we. I think we've just got to abandon that word we, because we, you and I didn't do these things. Your listeners didn't do these things. No normal American was responsible for any of this. I think it's better to have an us versus them approach with the government and speak of them as them. They did this and on the backs of the taxpayers, on the backs of my toil and sweat and my hard labor. They took the fruits of that to go do these inane, evil, terrible things. They did it, not us. What say you about that? Are you okay with that?
No, I'm totally okay with that. And the other observation that I would make about that particular essay there is that I did bring Frisbee Hoare back to what the prior generation of radical Republicans had done in waging the Civil War, that he was fighting to stop. The title of the speech, according to his biographer, is the subject. The illegitimacy of the subjugation of the Philippines. Well, he was arguing that you can't subjugate someone and force feed them a constitution and a way of life, basically. And I said, I loathe Senator Hoare for being the one member of the Senate in 1902 that said, no, you can't do this. There were no Frisbee Hoares in the Republican ranks back in 1861. 62, 63, 64, and certainly during Reconstruction, that weren't more than willing to subjugate an entire half of a continent worth of people and force them by brute force of arms, as he said, to adopt and to accept a constitution that was not of their own, that was not of their own choosing. So, using the term they, and us against them or us against they, I think that is it's something that sets you apart from them and puts us into the almost to the David versus Goliath mentality, or into that paradigm that, you know, there they are, big, giant, mighty, and strong, and here we are, small, puny, and weak. So it's a good visual, if nothing else.
Mike, before I let you go, speaking of differentiating, I want you to explain to people who may never have heard your show, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern on the Patriot Channel on Sirius XM. What's the number of that channel?
125.
125. Yeah, I got it programmed in, but I never look at the number. It's number 4 on my keypad. That's all I know. I want you to tell people what they're going to hear on the Mike Church Show that they're not going to hear on the other shows that they would hear on that station, and they'd be... This is a station that most of my listeners would be very unlikely to tune in for, but I want them to tune in for you during their commutes. What are they going to hear that they won't get on the other ones?
Well, they'll get a healthy dose of an actual objective look at the day's news, and certainly the day's political news, from someone that is on a channel that is supposed to just be a yes man for the Republican Party, and is also supposed to be a yes man for anything that has a, quote, conservative, end quote, label or description attached to it. And as I try and impart to the audience often and every day and every hour if I can, as Russell Kirk and other guys like, and other men like Irving Babbitt, and these are going back way in the past now, and men like Nock and others tried to point out that, look, conservatism, and Burke even pointed this out, conservatism is not political theory. Conservatism is a way of life. It is a tradition that you hand down from one to the next, and it's something that you have looked at the past and you've gone, wow, those guys were giants. I want to live like that. That was real. I'm glad that they passed that tradition or that custom or that particular form of government on to us. I think I'm going to defend that. But there may be times when, okay, well, we may need a slight little course adjustment, or we may need to add a little bit to what they did, but not by refuting all of what they did. And most of what goes on in between the politicking of it has nothing to do with politics, yet most conservatives are convinced that they have to take over a political party in order to have their way, and in order to achieve some manner of satisfaction in life. And I just try to counsel them through it that party is never going to save you, is never going to deliver the salvation that you seek. There's only one entity in this universe that I know of that can deliver that salvation, and that you should live your life as a conservative. You know, be a little R Republican, as I call it, traditionalist, make that meld or assimilate with your current circumstances and with the economics of it. There are some others on radio that are doing Austrian economics, and I by no means am well-read enough to start talking about the theory. But the basic premise that central economic planning, no matter who is doing it, does not work, is something you'll hear on almost a daily basis. And it doesn't matter what party or what state or what city is attempting it. It's always going to produce the same result, as Mises said, because of human action, and we can't predict it. So you'll hear an awful lot of that. And then one of the other things, that which is really surprisingly to me, that the other, quote, conservatives, end quote, seem to shy away from or have no time for, either that or are just too petrified to actually endeavor into, is I will bring the subject of Christianity and how it once was the bedrock of Western civilization life. And today we feel, well, we want our politics to be separate from our Christianity. Well, that's fine. But that doesn't mean that good Christians won't make good political players, especially if they're very faithful and devout in the way they approach their faith. And to me, there's not enough discussion of that. So I think it's just a different approach to the same subject matter, and without all the tired and the worn out and the hackneyed partisanship, which I don't know about you, Tom, but I came from that, and I have no desire to ever return to it. As a matter of fact, I'm kind of embarrassed and ashamed for some of those years, and I wish I could go back and take it back, but it's all part of the learning process. So all I can do now is just counsel people. I've been there, and I wouldn't do that if I were you.
Yeah, oh, I know. I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. I was watching the major political party conventions in their entirety when I was 12. That's not a joke. I was 12 years old, and I watched both political party conventions. Before I let you go, I just want to amplify your point about Christianity, because I know that there'll be listeners of this program who'll be cringing and, oh no, he wants a theocracy. I mean, oh, for heaven's sake, please. You know, I mean, that's just crazy left-wing hysteria. One great Christian principle I would like to see people observe would be the principle that was given the name subsidiarity in Catholic circles, but that you can see across the Christian tradition, and that is totally reflected in the unorthodox Jefferson, who in a brilliant passage said, you know, the best way to make everything work smoothly is to make sure that we don't just reflexively delegate tasks to higher authorities when we don't need to. So the individual does everything he can possibly do. And then when there are things that are beyond his capacity, then the family does it. And then the local community. And then above that, and then as you go up, there are fewer and fewer things that the lower bodies can't do. And then this makes the whole organism function effectively. And that was the Christian view. And of course, now in from high-profile Christian sources, you get just the opposite, that oh, good heavens, if we need Obama to do this, we need Washington to do that. I'd like to see them follow their own tradition. That's a whole other show. I got to let you run, Mike, but I am grateful for your time. I think you're doing such important proselytizing work, you know, getting these ideas out there to audiences that would not be exposed to them otherwise. I appreciate that, and I appreciate you being here today. Thanks a lot.
You're very welcome, Tom, anytime. Call me back sometime.
All right, everybody, check out Mike Church at MikeChurch.com and on the Mike Church Show, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, Sirius Patriot Channel 125. Don't forget, it is not too late to get the education we all wish we got but didn't when we were in high school and college. If you want to learn the real history and real economics that they didn't teach you, taught by me and by people you can trust, then head over to my libertyclassroom.com, where we have 9, soon to be 10 courses in all these subjects, plus Q&A forums. Get all your questions answered. Listen to courses in your car. Do all this at libertyclassroom.com with coupon code SHOW in all caps, and you will get a discount. I can hardly believe another week of programming is behind us. Thanks for subscribing on iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
The Tom Woods Show.